You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every catch, every two-minute drill, every fourth and inches, if it's NFL football and it happened, NFL Game Pass has got it. Get every live out-of-market preseason game, condensed games, replays, coaches film, and more. Kick off your free trial today at nfl.com/gamepass.
The Around the NFL podcast knows when daddy is coming home.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, Patrick Claibon, hello, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Oh, yeah. Monday show. No case of the Mondays here, right, Mark? Well, actually, no, because your hand, Mark.
It's getting worse.
You know, you had a splint on at the end of last week. Thank you, Tom Brady. Check out the show if you want to know why, from Friday. Now,
here's a tease.
Cut to Monday, and it's entire gauze wrap, and your finger is basically looks like it has about a foot of layering around it, protective layering. What's going on?
Well, long story short, when I had a major laceration on the left index finger, and I went to
Tom Brady's fault,
a credible emergency room. I won't mention the hospital.
Yes,
but they decided, hey, let's just glue this together, which I thought, fine, you guys.
Was your doctor like a preschooler?
No, this is a method they use, apparently. But I took the Band-Aid off today to check it out, and the glue had completely dissolved, and the cut was still enormous. And so it did not look good. The finger was blue, and I had no feeling at the end, and wow. I still don't. So went to an urgent care, another one I won't name to stay out of any lawsuits. But they basically, long story short, I'm very woozy. I feel woozy, but they're basically saying, like, you're lucky you don't have nerve damage, and they stitched it up and sent me on my way.
You mentioned preschooler, and I'm thinking, I'm suddenly having a vision of Mark maybe not in the total right mind actually last weekend, and like going into his kids' room, and like Colton with like a fake doctor kit, like putting Elmer's glue on him, and
the results would have been equal.
So anyway, we're hoping that Mark fights this, but I do. If there's one positive potential for a loopy Sessler here, and that could be okay.
It's happened before.
Yeah. I'm concerned. I'm worried about you.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I would say that finger's got maybe it's about a week left.
Yeah, I'm already thinking how to operate with 9 fingers in our society.
it's a crucial digit too.
It is.
We don't want to make light of it, but will you be ready for week one?
Well, yeah, I mean, my job essentially is to type. It's taking me out of that a little bit, but I should be fine by week one, apparently.
What a mess.
Yeah.
What a mess. All right, this is, we're starting to get down to the nitty-gritty now. The first week of the regular season is a week from Thursday, and that means we got to start looking at some really drilling down. And week three of the preseason is now in the rear view, and we'll touch on that today. But now we want to look ahead, and that's why we're bringing it back. We're going around the AFC in 48 minutes.
Yeah.
Claibon, are you familiar with this segment?
So familiar. I remember the first time where Sydney was required to find a sound for that initial 3 minutes.
Sure.
And I actually went back and listened to it just to get back. Well, because this is important
it's
to me.
Pro.
The fact that you guys would reach out and say, hey, come on and do the preview. And I'm nervous. I'm shaking a little bit, but but I want this.
I like it. Nervous energy is good energy. I feel like, listen, it's
you're Jimmy G right now, going on the road to Arizona week one last season.
Yeah, and next year somebody's going to give me $20 million sight unseen.
Don't look at this as you're trying to replace Wes's football knowledge, but just know that you're actually sitting in Wes's seat, and that's what we'll be asking you to do today.
Yeah, that's why I put my microphone cable across my front like a seatbelt.
If Absolutely. You listen to last year's, I can only assume that we, you know, went 100 for 100 in terms of good points and accurate predictions.
There were some things.
Yeah. We don't have to get into it. I'm sure we nailed it all. A-plus effort by all of us. All right, but before we do that, we got some news to do, including a tough trip to the Throne of Sleaze. So we say hello to Erica behind the glass. What's up, Erica?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
How are you?
Good.
Nice weekend?
Yeah, it was great.
Good.
It was great. I was going to say, Mark has, like, permanent like finger guns, like, hey.
Yeah, it's a true benefit of what's unfolding.
Like, I think you need to stay positive.
Also,
I will.
You know how I believe it was James Garfield was assassinated by a man that had a cast with a gun within the cast? Kind of got that look going on, too. I feel like, you know.
Calling me a presidential assassin in waiting.
No.
But if anyone
in the room was...
With the gun cast.
I would say Greg is higher on that list than he would like to believe in terms of a potentially dangerous public figure.
Yeah, Greg's hands are in his sleeves right now, too. What's going on?
Well, we know Greg can't
happening here.
Let's do some news.
It's tough any time a teammate goes down. So, you know, we've all been playing long enough where when someone does, you know, other people have to step in and fill the void.
Quit belly aching, Tommy. All right, here we go. The big news. What? I don't know. You know, we're just going to step up. Whatever. But the truth is, the Patriots were dealt a very tough blow on Friday in their third preseason game. Julian Edelman's not going to be involved with the team this year. An MRI revealed on Saturday what the team and Edelman had feared. He suffered a torn ACL in his right knee during the Pats' preseason win over the Lions. Rap sheet. Reported this, citing a source informed of the situation. The Patriots later confirmed that Edelman is done for the year, and you just heard from Brady just there. And Greg, I know Edelman, and we were just talking about this on the fantasy show that we did on Friday, and by the way, shame on you if you were doing your draft before the third preseason game. We were just talking about how Edelman, maybe not the flashiest fantasy player, but the guy was an absolute main cog in that offense. How much is this going to affect the Patriots, Greg?
I think it's a huge impact. They're deeper than they've ever been on offense, but I don't think you just replace Julian Edelman. People think, yeah, I read a couple takes. It's like he's no longer even their top wide receiver, so it's not as big deal. Let's see Brandon Cooks do it, because one of the reasons Edelman is so good is because he's always reading the field the same way as Brady. He's the team's all-time leader in playoff yards, in playoff touchdowns. He's an incredible player for them and is their best wide receiver. Most teams do not have Chris Hogan, Malcolm Mitchell, Brandon Cooks, you know, behind them, Danny Amendola. So they should be able to rebound. But Edelman is as big a loss and as good a wide receiver as they've had during the Brady run.
I feel like outside of Gronkowski, too, there isn't a player on the team that you would call a more committed, apostle to Tom Brady. He completely buys into Brady's approach to the game, and they have formed a pretty psychic connection, it feels like.
Like that game, if you watch that game, that was a great example. He had three catches in the first drive, broke about four tackles in those three catches.
He was dominating that drive.
And later in that game, when Brady was intercepted, it was because Chris Hogan went one way on an option route, and they do all these routes where the receiver has to choose which way to go based on the defense. Hogan went one way, the wrong way, and Brady threw an interception. That's the type of thing you don't see as much with Edelman.
A lot of people really sleep on Julian Edelman.
I don't know why.
You wonder why. I mean, you could have some theories. I certainly do. But you see when he plays 16 games, he had 105 catches. The first time last year he had 98. I mean, you could pretty much book it that he was going to have 100 catches this season. And you don't just replace that.
I'll use a Wes-ism here that Brady and Edelman had a mind meld, and there is something to be said for that. One of the most famous catches in Super Bowl history, Julian Edelman made it last year. Which if he doesn't make that catch, they might not win the Super Bowl. And now he's out of the picture. And the idea that Danny Amendola to use him as one of the hypothetical plug-and-play options they have in this situation. We've joked about it, Greg, and you've joked about it a lot about how, you know, Amendola is worth every dollar because he steps up in the Super Bowl every time they're in the game. But he, if he's going to be the guy, he needs to become a more consistent player. Edelman was a consistent playmaker for that team, and it's going to hurt that offense big time.
Yeah, he was their best wide receiver. Now, they can make it up in other ways, and we'll talk about that during the preview. I think the backfield's as deep as it's ever been. They have Gronk is healthy again. Dwayne Allen is at tight end. So I think you can make it up in other ways. I was interested, I don't know if you guys saw, the analysis by Erica Tamposi done immediately after the injury on Twitter, and I'm going to quote this. It's in all caps. Edelman, you better shake it off. Oh, my OMG, I swear.
That was a voice recording of myself just now. I just heard it. I mean, it was identical.
Shake it off.
Okay, Edelman is like the heart of that team when you have Brady. I mean, it's an emotional. It's not just he's
see
great.
That. Your caps on the.
Oh my
tweet.
God!
I just that.
I'm heartbroken.
I caught Wes's ire two to three years ago when I said Edelman at his best is absolutely better than Wes Welker at his best, and I think his play over the last few years has borne that out a little bit.
And now he won't be there. So let's see.
Wes feeling a disturbance in the force, right? He's been essentially subtweeted on this show.
But remember, the Patriots won the Super Bowl without Rob Gronkowski last year. I would not count them out with this loss.
As 3-28?
No.
Yeah, so here we go. Moving on. The Cincinnati Bengals are facing an absence themselves on Sunday. Linebacker Avontaze Perfect. He returned an interception, 62 yards for a touchdown. Everybody was saying, oh, Perfect's looking great. Another great piece of that defense. But guess what? Perfect might not be around. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport reported Sunday night that Perfect is facing a 5-game suspension for a hit that he put on Chiefs fullback Anthony Sherman last week. Video of the play in question appeared to show Perfect hitting Sherman after Chiefs quarterback Alex Smith released a pass headed for tight end Travis Kelce. ESPN first reported this development. Rappaport reported that Perfect intends to appeal the ruling. What are your thoughts on this? Patrick Claibon, Perfect, 5 games. Now it's really getting serious in terms of the league coming after him.
Yeah, history a factor. It's almost as though there was this giant Vontaze Perfect file. And note, next time he does anything questionable, we're going to have to drop the hammer on him. Because you look at this and you wonder if anybody else is coming across on a mesh concept and gets hit a little bit after the quarterback throws the ball, if we're even having this conversation.
Well,
if
no.
It's not for the player.
That's the league rule. I think any other player would just be fined $15,000. And they have a system where it's a bigger punishment each time. And the last time he was suspended, which was for 3 games, they cited 6 different times that he had violated. And so I think basically any other player, I think you would have just been fined.
It is hardly, if you go through his catalog of, you know, egregious hits, it's hardly the worst. It's hardly the worst. And even the player, even Sherman afterwards said, clean hit. Told him that on the field. That's what Perfect says. Oh. But one, it's a huge loss for the Bengals because Perfect has never looked better than he had this preseason.
One thing that's a great point, and I think he's like one of if the key members of that defense other than Geno Atkins. But what's been lost here is there is a rules emphasis at play that I don't think a lot of fans and I wasn't had forgotten about really, where certain illegal hits, including these blindside hits, which are essentially collision low crossers. You remember that book that we talk about? That,
great
that,
title.
That's what this hit is. That a blindside hit where he knows the guy's out of the play, or at least they believe he knows the guy's out of the play, is now a rules emphasis that you're going to get fined for more.
We'll talk about the Cincinnati Bengals a little bit later, as we will the Patriots. Finally in the news, Tropical Storm Harvey has been wreaking havoc in South Texas. Houston has been taking a barrage all through the weekend. More than 30 inches of rain has fallen on parts of Houston since Thursday, according to the National Weather Service. The death toll on Monday had risen to 8, and we're talking a situation where tens of thousands of people are going to be looking for emergency shelter. The governor called in the entire National Guard of the state to help out. There's been a lot of outreach in terms of people trying to help out. Nice job by J.J. Watt, fundraising, the Texans as well. But what does this mean for the Houston Texans now? Greg, they have week one scheduled. They have a game at home. What are they saying right now? Are we going to be seeing the Texans in Houston? It seems impossible right now.
Well, right now they're practicing at the Cowboys facility. They have not announced as we tape this what they're going to do with Thursday's preseason game. I would expect that word to come down soon, whether they play it in Dallas. I suppose they could just cancel the game entirely, but that seems unlikely. We've seen in the past teams play in other stadiums, and if Houston's not ready, and I think this flood has been a hard thing to wrap your mind around because it's not over. Like, I've seen some before and after shots of, like, what's happened. It's like, it's not after. They had more rainfall last night, Sunday night, than they usually have for 2 months at a time, and it's still going. So it's, I don't think people really know, because it's impossible to know the damage that's gone on and how long this recovery is going to take.
Yeah, the storm has turned out back towards the Gulf of Mexico, but the flooding could actually get worse in Houston with their flood control reservoirs and having to release water. And it's a situation that it seems like it turned into a worst-case scenario from where it was on Thursday, and now here we are Monday, and things are a lot worse than everyone had realized. And you feel for those people, and you hope that they get some good news down there soon.
I mean, yeah, the location of a preseason football game, probably one of the low wattage angles to this. There's a lot more going on in that city than where the game will be played against the Cowboys.
Right, but for the team, they're in a really unique circumstance where Tom Savage is talking about, you know, his 7-month-old baby and his wife is there, and pretty much all of their families are in Houston, and they're separated from them because they were on the road at a preseason game. Some of the coaches I know had to evacuate their houses. I can think of I evacuated to Houston once during a hurricane, and the place, the parents' house that I stayed at, parents of my friends, their house is flooded right now. His wife's house is flooded. So there's a lot of people whose lives have been totally upended, and I don't think anyone really knows, like, where it's going.
Yeah, tough to even think about the number of people that had to uproot and leave the Gulf Coast and New Orleans after Katrina and in southern Mississippi and actually relocated to Houston.
Right.
Who might be in the same situation now over a decade later. It's just horrible.
It's crazy. And Bill O'Brien, the Texans coach, here's what he had to say. Obviously, as the coach, you're a manager, you have a lot of people that are looking to you, and here's what O'Brien had to say about the situation.
You know, football is obviously important, but I think the most important thing right now is doing everything we can for our city. I will tell you right now, we're going to dedicate this season to the city of Houston, the people of Houston. You know, there are no guarantees in football. That's not what I'm here to say, but I will guarantee that this team will go out every Sunday, Monday, Thursday, whenever they ask us to play. And we'll play our asses off for the city of Houston. I promise you that.
All right. So that's what's going on in Houston. We'll track that as the week goes on. All right. That's what's happening in the news, folks. And, yes, it is time to go around the AFC. Some people say, oh, let's just go right through the conference.
Sure, sure.
No. That's not the best way to really get an idea of what's going on with each of these teams. So we go around.
You could almost say we're circumventing the AFC.
On some level.
Avoiding it entirely.
You could say that, but actually what we're doing
is weird.
We're going around it so we can get the real angle on everybody. 360.
Like concentric circles?
Yeah.
To fill it in?
Kind of concentric-y.
Venn diagrams?
Yeah. So, all right. So that's what we're going to do. And here are the rules, because we can't be here all day. We got jobs. Everybody's got jobs.
Claybon might get called for breaking news in the middle of this show. That's just a fact.
Sometimes it happens.
Absolutely could happen. So we're going to do 3 minutes for each of the AFC teams, for divisions, for teams in each division, 4 times 4, 16. Double check my math. 32 teams divided by 2 equals 16. Okay, nailed it.
Twice.
So, there we go. Got it. So I showed my work there, Greg. And you think getting a 39 in a state mandated math test would shake my confidence? No, I just plug in the numbers and keep rolling.
You're never too old to get better.
All right, here we go. And we're going to start with the AFC East. And Greg, I'm going to start with the throne of ease.
Okay.
We already talked about Julian Edelman. So, Erica, this is your first time doing around the AFC. And we're going to do around the NFC on Wednesday. Don't you worry, NFC heads. Is that a thing?
It's just people who, it's like people, they only watch NFC games. They're just like, oh, I hate the style of play in the AFC. Never watch them.
So once I throw it to Greg, start the clock, and then, you know, give us like a warning around the 1 minute mark. And then once we hit it, we're moving on to the next team. Just a heads up, it will be the Zeuser. So I'm giving myself a heads up.
Okay.
After that, I will throw to Mark and then Claybon, and then we'll just repeat going in each. This is a little bit exciting. A little bit exciting right now.
Fired up.
A little pressure packed.
All right, here we go, Erica. You ready? And New England Patriots, start us off. Greg.
I want to hear a buzzer or something.
No, just go.
All right. Their backfield right now.
That cost you in, 6 seconds.
In New England, and this occurred to me watching their game this weekend, Deion Lewis has emerged as a big-time preseason story because it looks like the old Deion Lewis is back. He has a chance to be their starter week one. Rex Burkhead has showed out well. Mike Gillisley's healthy again. Looks like their goal line guy is going to be a big-time factor. And James White's a Super Bowl hero. I think this is the deepest backfield, the best running game that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have ever had, and that can help mitigate the loss of Julian Edelman, and I'm looking at it as something that's going to be different about this Patriots team, that I think this running game is going to be a big-time story and one of the reasons why their offense is still among the league's best.
It's funny because a couple years ago in the offseason, I wrote a piece ranking NFL backfields and had someone on the Patriots tell me that out of 10, he would rate his own backfield as a 2 or a 3.
Mm.
This is before Deion Lewis emerged, but you look now, and without Edelman on the field, I think someone like Rex Burkhead could wind up playing a major role in the passing game for them. They just have so many different guys that can do so much out of the backfield.
They're going to do it. They're going to get the production. It's just going to look different. And it's also,
right.
They're going to be defended.
I think they're going to be on the field at the same time a lot. Like Gillisley will be in the backfield. One will be in the slot. And that's why as much as it hurts for a Patriots fan to see Edelman, because that's one of the best players, one of your favorite players, that they are deeper than they have ever been. It is, on paper, it's all paper. They're better than they were in 2000.
Hey, the games aren't paid on paper, though, Greg. You know what I mean?
Greg.
Yes?
How about this? Can you point one area of the team that you would say you're concerned about?
I don't think it's a good front seven. I don't think it's a good pass rush. In terms of the pass rush talent, I think it's below league average. No doubt. It's not one of the better front sevens that they've had. They've lost a lot of their talent over the year. I don't know if they're like well above average defense.
The Coney Ealy trade didn't work out.
No. Nope.
And that was another guy that maybe they hoped he would be pass rush. Actually signed on waivers with the Jets. But Deion Lewis, it's easy to forget now. He came back and made some noise last year, but before he blew out his knee the year before, he had emerged as this like killer option for Belichick in that offense. So if that comes back again and he's that guy, he's going to get a lot of work.
Uber talented satellite back.
Well, part of the reason too is these guys have all been there. The offensive line is back. Hogan now has some experience there. Like two of those running backs have been there. Gronk, it's like the continuity that McDaniels has, and Brady's been in the entire same system the entire time.
Well, they're basically using the Bills as a farm team, too, which is annoying if you're from Buffalo.
A lot of things to be annoyed about if you're in Buffalo.
4, 3, 2, 1.
All right, I'll go with the Dolphins. Let's talk a little Dolphins here. And, you know, all the focus is on Jay Cutler in this offseason or in the summer, and rightfully so. That's a big addition following a devastating injury to your starting quarterback. But I'm going to assume Jay Cutler is going to be Jay Cutler, all right? And nothing in this preseason has told me otherwise. He's going to make plays. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to be Jay. He's probably going to be maybe a little better or a little worse than Ryan Tannehill. So two points I want to make. Number one, the Dolphins have the Bills and the Jets four times, and the Patriots do too. But the Dolphins do too. So this idea of the Dolphins maybe falling back now that they lost their quarterback, you're going to have two teams in your division in the midst of a major rebuild. So I think that's going to really obviously help them when, if they take care of business, that's four wins right off the bat. Oh my goodness. You got to love the Dolphins for that reason alone. But here's the reason not to love the Dolphins. I don't know if you guys caught their last preseason game. They got shredded on defense. They gave up 28 points in the first half, and that's with most of their defensive starters playing in the game. And this is the same team that was 29th overall in yards allowed last season. They've been bad throughout the preseason so far. I don't want to put too much into it, but bad defense last year, not looking good this year. Jay Cutler's there, but if they can't get stops on defense, this is going to be a problem. How worried are we about their D, Mark?
Well, I mean, it was an overt concern last year. The best case scenario for Miami is you almost take a Cowboys type approach where Jay Cutler, I would say, I don't know if he's ever been on a team with more weapons around him. I mean, he's got a great trio of wide receivers. And if you're the Dolphins, you use Jay Ajayi and you eat up the clock, that you want to control the ground game, the possessions, and keep your defense off the field as much as you can.
Jay Ajayi made it work last year in the spots that he played in. And so you wonder, obviously, Ryan Tannehill doesn't bring the same opportunities that Jay Cutler does. So it's going to be a totally different looking offense. But like you said, Dan, you're going to get Jay Cutler. You're
like, I don't know what the ceiling is. What's the ceiling for this team?
What wins?
It's not any different. I think they were very fortunate to get the amount of wins. They won a lot of close games last year. They would do very well to maintain a 10-win type of pace. Like, I don't really see, to me, they're an 8 or 9-win type of team.
Outside of that Bills-Jets thing, though, their schedule has some brutal turns. They got a playoff team type schedule.
I mean, they have Andre Branch, Cameron Wake, William Hayes, a first-round pick, and Charles Harris as their pass rushers. That's pretty good, but right behind that, you brought in some linebackers. We'll see if Lawrence Timmons works out. You definitely have questions
10,
in the secondary.
9,
like, you're right. The defense,
8,
to me, worries.
7,
yeah,
and, 6,
but they made it work
5,
last year.
4,
yeah. Maybe they'll make it work
3,
again. 10 wins last
2,
year, it seems doable. 1. Moving on. Mark Sessler.
You just talked about the Jets. I have to ask with the Buffalo Bills if they are a legitimate threat to New York's, at this point, not secret plan to say basically chase the number one draft pick. Because I look at a roster that we, even in the last couple weeks, you see how much they're turning this roster, how differently they want the team's identity to look than whatever they inherited from Rex Ryan. I see a quarterback that probably is in his last year starting for them, may not even finish the year as a starter for them. I see LeSean McCoy, who could be traded by Halloween. Is this a team? Could this be the worst team in the AFC?
The way they're off, they're that offense. Every preseason, there's one offense where you heard all offseason was a disaster in practice, and then they get to the preseason, they just can't make a first down, and it actually does carry over, and you worry about it, and they are that offense this year. And we didn't even mention Tyrod Taylor had a concussion. I started to wonder, and Bills fans are crazy. They want to start Nathan Peterman. They want to start this fifth-round pick who's had a couple flashes, but it's not like he's lighting it up in the preseason. This concussion is very weird timing-wise. Like, could Peterman start week 1? I thought maybe they could trade Tyrod Taylor. I was starting to think they might just dump him, but they can't if he's hurt.
You got to feel for Bills fans. They're part of the sad brotherhood that they've just missed the playoffs for 16 straight years, and now they're going to go into a painful rebuild. Reggie Ragland was traded today, second-round pick, last year. Never even played a down with this team. Blew out his knee and was being used sparingly. Was on the roster bubble, so he was sent to KC. Mark, I believe you had the scoopage on that one last month.
Oh, yes, that's right.
You
yes.
put it in trades you yeah. want to see. And then
well,
you know,
and it was like
you're powerful.
We didn't even know how to make this story a headline. It was like potential logical trades that could make sense for some teams. And it was, you know, somewhat of a laughing stock, but then I nailed it.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
Well, maybe Brandon Bean, their GM, was reading it. And
there you
like,
go.
Yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
You hope not if you're a Bills fan. All due respect.
No, you would not. You would not want them to be, you know, sourcing their team plans off of like a blogger on NFL.com.
They can't do that when they've got a giant board that said things Doug Whaley did, and they're just marching off every single one of them.
I mean, for an organization that had so much patience with Doug Whaley, I mean, now they're not making any bones about it. They're just stripping his legacy completely. What a legacy.
It is a defensive coach with some talent on defense, and their defenses look great in the preseason. It's worth mentioning that they have some players. Marcel Darius got sent home over the weekend, but he's there still. Jerry Hughes had a great preseason. They love their rookie cornerback, Tre'Davious White. Like, they could be a good defense.
You have to hope that the hope is that the ownership, which is there's been a lot of tumult under that ownership group in Buffalo, that they're said to the coach and GM, we realize it's going to get worse. You have a chance. You're not going to pull the plug on you guys in 2 seasons.
Don't undermine Tyrod, please.
And to answer your question, I don't think they're the worst team in the AFC, but they're bottom three.
Speaking of, go! Hey, let's talk about the Jets. So the last time the Jets won 5 games, it was back in 1965. They were in the AFL. Do you guys know what happened the year after that?
The last time they won 5 games?
Yeah.
They won the Super Bowl the next year.
No, they won six games.
Oh. So that's what you're predicting.
Keep hope alive. No,
I think they drafted Joe Namath around then, didn't they?
Yeah, sometime around then. Yeah. Things got good. There's hope. There's hope. Shout out to Dan's dad. There's good news. The battle for the Snoopy trophy, which I found out was an actual trophy.
Oh, yeah.
Over the weekend. Big time trophy.
It's a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
So Hackenberg looked horrible. Bryce Petty came in and led this miraculous comeback. So then, of course, Bryce Petty gets hurt. He's going to be out for 4 weeks.
No, he'll be okay. He'll be okay.
Hackenberg comes back in, and then they ultimately lose. But so now we get Josh McCown. And when I think about this Jets team, and as Mark intimated, the efforts to obtain the number one overall pick, I think of a fictional baseball team that – the ownership did not want them to win, but they rallied around an aging veteran.
Oh, no.
Josh McCown is Jake Taylor, and he's going to come in
with
a somber moment in the locker room and says, nothing left to do now but win the whole thing.
Wow.
There you go.
So you're saying that Josh McCown is going to channel Tom Berenger in a big spot.
Yes. Not sniper like Tom Berenger, though.
You're another speaking awesome Dan's movie. Language. There's at least a little part of Dan that suddenly just woke up and was like, you never know. You never know.
You never know. You never know. I know. In fact, the Bryce Petty did light it up against the Giants' third and fourth stringers. That was nice to see through three touchdown passes. And then, of course, Bryce Petty always gets hurt. He gets rolled up on. But that's just a minor sprain. I think he even practiced today. So he should be ready for week one. And he is going to, I think, get the most starts on this team. I think that's how things have changed now. I think McCown was named starter today, obviously. Christian Hackenberg is, I think, after another dead-on-arrival performance, I think his window is shut.
You don't need to evaluate him again.
Yeah, I think that's the way they
feel. You will this Thursday. I mean, he'll play Thursday again.
I think the writing's on the wall, though. That's just the way it seems to me. And Bowles said something on Monday praising Petty, which seemed to be sending a message that he's kind of setting the table here. Because you know McCown's not going to play more than eight games this year. I think Hackenberg's done.
Well, I think Hackenberg, if he was drafted where Petty was drafted, would not make this team. And watching that game, this wasn't like the normal developmental bumps. This is watching quarterback play that you just don't normally see in the NFL because the players are just better.
10.
You know, like he's so overwhelmed I wouldn't shock me if they just cut him, if they just decide, let's release him right now.
If McCagnan can have the guts to do that, it was his mistake. Moving on to the AFC North. Greg, get us going.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of negativity around the old Ravens this offseason.
That old?
Because, well, a lot of injuries that we've been talking about. No one's had any worse luck. But I think this Ravens team is sneaky confident because they have a bunch of young defensive players that I think not a lot of big names. Tyus Bowser, a rookie. Brent Irvin. Matthew Judon. Michael Pierce. All these guys that are kind of no names. And there's others. The stars are still there. They're in the secondary and they got Terrell Suggs. All these guys, when you add them all up, they're suddenly very young and they kind of came up together and they're fast. And I think we're going to be looking at some old early 2000s Ravens style game. Not that they're the 2000s Ravens defense, but we're going to be seeing some 12-9 ugly games that remind you of Kyle Bowler, and that the Ravens could still be pretty good winning games like that, like the old Ravens.
Shout out Kyle Bowler.
Big Bowler shout out in a big spot. Hey, Justin Tuck's still in the building, and I believe. I think this is a team that could win 9 or 10 games for sure.
Well, I feel that way about the Ravens every year because they've had a few total stink job regular seasons, but that was typically tied to injuries. You have to look at that offense, though. It's possible, but we're in a different NFL than year 2002. The league has vastly changed, and this formula where Tucker's going to hit 5 field goals a game and they're going to win 15-13, a lot has to happen for that kind of thing to play out. Like, if Flacco's back injury becomes an extenuating thing that goes on and on,
still hasn't practiced.
Big problems in Baltimore. I mean, you may only be giving up 20 points a game, 19 points a game, but how are you going to score them?
And the offense wasn't exactly humming with Joe Flacco last year.
Right.
Nope.
And he said this weekend, Harbaugh, that Flacco would definitely be back, but it's getting close. It was like a week and a half away. He hasn't practiced football.
I don't trust any of
these coaches.
I've
kind of stopped listening to them talk about Flacco in general.
By the way, Brashad Perriman, who I was excited about this season, I don't know why, he hasn't practiced in a month either. So they're pretty thin. Ryan Mallett continues to confound me that they have not gone out and gotten another quarterback.
Are you hinting at a certain quarterback that they haven't gone out and gotten?
Colin Kaepernick, yeah. That would be the one.
To the point where they talk to him and stuff. You think the relationship's
It really sounded like the coaching staff and possibly the front office wanted him.
It's gross negligence if this turns into a situation where Ryan Mallett starts through September and they decided to just take a chance that Joe Flacco's back was going to get better. And clearly they thought it'd be better by now, even if they haven't said that. But if Mallett ends up starting multiple games, you almost give yourself no chance to win.
You play the Bengals, Browns, and Steelers in the first month. And if you don't have Flacco there, you're in big trouble.
And it could be so frustrating because of Jimmy Smith and Eric Weddle and Tony Jefferson, because they're going to be so good, and yet they still might not be able to get wins.
Don't say anything bad about Ozzie Newsome. Not allowed.
Doesn't know how to build an offense right
well,
now.
Well, he didn't.
Sure.
He didn't go out and personally injure the 12 players they've lost in the preseason.
The Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay, so the Steelers are really they're slow playing their opponents on this preseason schedule. You haven't seen anything. Big Ben's rarely played a lot of dink and dunk stuff in their most recent preseason game. Forget about that though. When the lights go up, you're going to have Lev Bell, who's going to report in a couple days. Martavis Bryant rejoining Antonio Brown on the outside. I have no reason to think that Martavis won't be an immediate playmaker there. So my question is, who's going to stop this team in a healthy state from putting up 30 points a game? And we were bullish about this team before Bryant's suspension last year. Now with all the pieces intact, who's going to stop them?
How about this? Nobody, until like every other season, Pittsburgh finds itself in the divisional game of the AFC playoffs and they stop themselves. I think we've been asking this question about the Steelers relevantly for years. It's like who outside of Pittsburgh is their worst?
I guess my point is Lev Bell seems to always get hurt at the worst time. Bryant wasn't there at all. I'm just from, let's say you're an optimistic Steelers fan. You're saying, okay, all the pieces are there.
Yeah,
what if these guys do stay on the field?
This is the season. Tomlin has turned the defense over from LeBeau to Keith Butler, and they have a young defense that I think is primed. Like, this is kind of Tomlin's defense. You're not going to get Lev Bell, Antonio Brown, Roethlisberger, and Bryant all in their primes together all at once. I don't know if, you know, we're not sure if Big Ben's still in his prime right now. He's got to show that.
Or if he'll even be back next year.
This is the season. Don't have that midseason swoon where you lose to the Browns and the Bills back-to-back in weeks 5 and 6.
Yeah. We see these guys and we see them individually, and the idea is once they're all there together, then suddenly there's going to be all the points are going to happen at the same time. But the issue is that there's only one football, and a lot of times Antonio Brown was getting all those balls because he was really the only option. And so I'm not exactly sure it leads to
– good offensive line, though. That can make up for a lot. I mean, that can
– underrated line.
This is the goal, and getting at, Mark, your point, I think this is the goal of the Steelers. You can't control injuries, but you cannot go into one of these midseason funks, which takes you into the spot where you end up 10-6, 11-5. You need to play up to your potential, and so when you get to that divisional playoff game, it's in your building. They cannot go to Foxborough again because we've seen the script. You need to find a way to have a better record than the Patriots in the regular season. Otherwise, I feel like you're going to go down the same road again when the lights are on in January.
I really think that even though we've made fun of Roethlisberger from the beginning for his retirement whispers and questions, that this potentially could be the end.
Hayward, Tuitt, Dupree, Shazier. This is the team. They always act like they're like, we're one of the franchises. Like, this is the year. Go have one of those 15-1 Cordell Stewart seasons or 15-1 Roethlisberger type of season. That's what you should have. This team can take out the Patriots.
Mark Sessler. Oh, it's time to talk your team.
All right. Well, when it comes to Cleveland, all preseason, let's talk about the quarterback situation over and over and over. The biggest difference that I have observed with this team compared to the past, literally since 1999, they have somehow figured out how to tackle players on the opposite team. I have never seen this before in Cleveland. And I do also think that, not that they were game planning, that they took this preseason very seriously. They wanted to be where they're at, 3-0, and show that culturally we can start to expect to win. So maybe they were doing a little more game planning on defense, and some of this is a result of that. Forget the quarterback business. Do we believe that Cleveland's defense, there is talent here, maybe is beginning to turn a corner, or is it a mirage that gets found out in week one when you play Pittsburgh?
It's not a mirage. I mean, Myles Garrett is a spectacular football player, and we saw him get triple teamed at times over this past weekend. They've got guys that can make plays. Not sure how Peppers is going to translate.
He's looked good.
Yeah.
He was able to get Jameis. So it's not a mirage.
It's weird that Myles Garrett being a total beast in the preseason, one of, for what it's worth, PFF's top-rated players in the preseason, that's been a little under the radar that, like, hey, this number one pick is absolutely looking like a number one pick.
Maybe no one wants to jinx it. You know, yeah. The same way with Clowney when he came in with such expectations. Yeah, I think they're more talented. They're a lot more talented this year. And you can't, if you have, like Joey Bosa showed last year, how that could have a transformative effect on a defense if you have a guy that's an instant impact guy. I wouldn't put really anything into their 3-0 record. I get the logic of it and also the tackling thing. That's good that they seem fundamentally sound, but I really want to see them win a game that matters in September, because I think if they just win their opening game or even split those first two games, all that stuff gets washed away.
Opening game is Pittsburgh, and we just announced them as the team that can knock out the
England. I have a theory, though.
England,
Greg Williams' shtick works best early in his tenure. I believe they might have won the Super Bowl in his first season in New Orleans, especially with like a young team who kind of buys what he's in, is a little scared of him, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's the time when Greg Williams' message
So Cleveland's window begins now.
Right now. We haven't even mentioned DeShone Kizer is the week one starter, and you are buying in, Sessler. I know you said don't talk about the quarterback, but give me a break.
I am buying in. I mean, I think that, you know, number one, this is the guy you have to evaluate before next year's draft, and it's, why waste time on Brock Osweiler? That never felt right to me.
You said that this team is going to be 8-8 on your Twitter.
I could see them going 8-8.
I mean, that would be huge for the Browns just to get there. And it was a anti-Browns thing to do to not go with Brock Osweiler, and that's another positive sign that things are a little different right now. Bengals talk.
He looks like a real quarterback.
Greg, the buzzer sounded.
Screw the Bengals.
Screw the Bengals, the headline for the Bengals discussion.
By the way, Claybon continuing to make his power play in Chris Wessling's seat, wants to talk Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Patrick.
An end to Westivus, perhaps.
Ooh.
They had real problems on the offensive line last year, so Andrew Whitworth, who's spectacular, leaves to go to L.A., and Kevin Zeitler goes to the Browns. And so what do? They're going with the rest of the guys that they drafted in the past, and we don't really know a lot about the guys that are going to play on the offensive line, and that's a real question. John Ross comes in, Joe Mixon. You think A.J. Green's going to be healthy, but if Andy Dalton doesn't have time to get the ball deep to John Ross or to A.J. Green, what's it going to be? What's the future going to be for not just the team, but – at the end of this, does Marvin Lewis decide, you know, this has been fun, guys, I'm done with this?
Mm.
And does the team move on from Andy Dalton? There's a lot of questions to be determined about the Bengals long-term from this season.
Dalton was not protected well last year when they did have those guys on the line. I mean, he was battered around, and the sack count was ridiculous. And so then you lose him. I think, you know, we spent a lot of the offseason talking about that line. What is hopeful to me and why I think that you could prevent all this turnover is that what they've added on offense makes them a completely different creation than what they were in the past. I mean, Mixon, if Ross pays off, but Mixon to me looks like he is going to be a fantastic player.
How about 16 games of Tyler Eifert?
Right.
The connection. Yeah. Well, he's got to stay healthy. But the connection that Dalton had, I thought that was the main difference in terms of making Andy Dalton a really good quarterback 2 years ago, is that he formed this deadly red zone threat with Eifert. I think he had something like 13 touchdowns before Dalton went down. And if you get healthy A.J. Green, I feel like I really do like the Bengals. I'm not an offensive line expert. I don't know how that unit's going to look when week one starts. But if they are just proficient, as long as they are not a major liability, I think that this team could threaten in that division, I think, like an 11-win season, and I think they're a playoff team.
I'm with you. I think they're a playoff team, and trusting those tackles to rise up, we'll see if it works, but that's what the Bengals do. Football Outsiders had a great article about them, that they have more of their own homegrown players on their team than any team in the NFL. That's what they do. They draft their players. They keep it. They're kind of zigging while the rest of the NFL is zagging in terms of free agency. They truly are a draft and develop team. They're secondary. They've got first rounders that have barely even played for them. Darquez Dennard and William Jackson is now coming up. I think the Burfict injury or the suspension really, really hurts them.
Yes.
He's kind of the centerpiece. And if Wes was here, he would want me to mention that Burfict Belichick deserves it because he's the dirtiest player in NFL history, according to Wes.
Shout out to Wes. All right, halfway through the game, why don't we throw out? We all got the Patriots in the AFC East, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comfortably.
I don't think any of us. Do we see the Dolphins going back to the playoffs? I don't know. I don't personally.
Wouldn't shock me.
And then in the North, where do we all stand on a division win? I'm going to go with the Steelers personally. I'm just curious for you guys.
I like the Steelers to go deep and then the Bengals to make the playoffs.
I think that
feels right. I mean, the AFC North feels like the same thing to me over and over.
Claybon's standing. Do you have to go?
Yeah, I was going to run down and do an update. Apparently, we've got a solution in the Thursday preseason game.
Oh, wow.
All right, so there you go. A little breaking news from Patrick Claybon. He's going to put his headset off. We're going to continue on. We're going to soldier on, and we'll start before we do that, before we move to the second half of our AFC in 48 minutes. New era. New Era's NFL Training Collection has a great combination of innovative performance and style with features like UV protection, moisture wicking, and cooling technology. There's no reason you shouldn't make the New Era NFL Training Collection a part of your daily attire. Every day.
Every single day. I don't care what's happening to you.
Available at retailers like Lids, NFLShop.com, and Dick's Sporting Goods in your favorite team. All right, here we go. We'll start with the AFC South. Greg, get us going with the defending division champs.
Watching the preseason, if I did a power rankings of the worst offensive lines, should not really be a big metrics grab, I don't think. Houston's under the radar here. Tom Savage, Deshaun Watson, they have had absolutely no time at all. No one seems to remember that their left tackle, Dwayne Brown, has been holding out. I went like Googling for articles about it. No one has written about Dwayne Brown even in Houston for the last month for some reason. It's just, I guess they expect that he'll be back. But even when he gets back, it is a rough-looking group on paper. Mm. And I do worry for Savage or Watson, who under the radar had a quite an up-and-down preseason that just was typical for a rookie, but he did not look ready to play. I think these quarterbacks are in a really tough spot, really thin at wide receiver. You got DeAndre Hopkins and really no one else, and a pretty poor offensive line. Like, that is a recipe to me for this offense to be just as bad as it was for Brock Osweiler. Maybe the quarterbacks are a little better, but I'm not sure if the offense is really going to be much improved.
I mean, they're not noticeably better, and I realize in that Saturday night game that Houston didn't have a flood of starters in there. I mean, none of their top three wideouts, but they looked ghastly. It was a bad performance. It was bad football. And if you're Houston, you spent all offseason with this quarterback battle. These are the kinds of teams where they're going to play two, if not three, quarterbacks this season. They're all going to play. We're going to see. You know, we know O'Brien.
You think they're going to Brandon Whedon?
Because if it becomes some sort of a mash unit by the end of the year, you never know. I mean, it just feels like every season under O'Brien, he's forced to play more than even two quarterbacks.
All right, the counter there is the Texans aren't a perfect team, but this is not a perfect division. And especially with Andrew Luck's situation up in the air, I know a lot of people think the Titans are ready to make this the next step up, but I think the Texans, on the strength of nothing else other than J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney potentially finally ready to both just kill it together at the same time, I think their defense still has that ability to win games. The offense isn't going to score a lot of points, but I think O'Brien, and I know he's not a super popular figure, he seems to get the most out of his team. So I think he'll find a way, because it seems like the Texans always do.
He has done that. It's the right division to be in if you want to go 9-7 and be a division winner. That's a great argument to reseed the playoffs.
It'll be interesting. It's impossible to know how it impacts a team on the field, but the flood is going to be something that really shapes this season for them. We'll see how long that they're away from home, and they're already said they're playing for the city, and there's going to be a lot of emotions and families affected. I don't know what that means, but I'm with you on Watt and Clowney. I can't remember being more excited to watch a duo of defensive linemen play together in my lifetime. What's better than Watt and Clowney?
I like that. Craig coming strong.
The Indianapolis Colts. Or the Indianapolis Colts, as some other people say. All right, so let's talk about it. Claybon already.
Wow, Claybon is back after only missing one team. We did the ad read, Claybon, while you were gone, but still.
Was the ad read?
Yeah, sorry, bro.
Yeah,
what's the news?
I thought that we had an update on the solution. It turns out the newsroom has just given up on getting an update from the NFL on whether or not this game.
Soldier on in NFL
media. So we just taped an update and that's it.
Okay. All right. Let's start with the Colts. Okay. So we know the situation. We know the situation that we don't know the situation. Andrew Luck, is he going to be ready for the start of season? It increasingly feels like he won't be, even though we haven't been given any official word. Scott Tolzien under center, three first downs and a total of 3 points in the first two games. That's Hackenberg-esque. They were a little better against the Steelers. They scored a touchdown. They had seven first downs, so there was some progress. So here's the big question for me. If the Colts have any chance this year. First of all, Luck's got to come back sooner rather than later. But their schedule is somewhat favorable in the first month. At Rams, home against Cardinals, home to Browns, at Seahawks, home to 49ers. Not a cakewalk, but not a tough schedule. Can they survive for a month if, let's say, that's how long we're missing Luck? Because it's all hypothetical. I'll just throw a month out there. Claybon.
No.
Okay?
They can't. The Titans are going to be better. Somebody out in the West is going to make a push for the wild. It's the options for the Colts with no Luck for a month are zero to me.
The options are that the rest of the AFC South is bad if that happens. I don't think that'll happen, but that 1-3 doesn't kill you. That maybe he comes back, he misses four games, they're 1-3, and he can at least fight to bring them back into the mix.
If you're Chris Ballard, I mean, I thought he did a lot of good things this offseason. They've had some terrible luck. The whole situation with Andrew Luck, the whole point was to make this team not so dependent simply on Luck alone, that there'd be more around him. And it feels like it's almost never been more in this direction.
Because of the quarterback.
Well, right. But it's like other teams lose quarterbacks. Like this team could go 2-14 if they didn't have Luck in the lineup.
Mm. I mean, you put Derek Anderson or whoever, a good backup quarterback on that team, and I think they would have a chance. But they have so many questions. They're going to be starting 7 or 8 new guys on the defense too. They have injury. You know, they have injury. Their center is injured. Jack Muhort is injured right now. They've got all sorts of issues. That Luck's not even the only one.
Let's say he does miss that first month, which would be 5 games, and they go in the tank. And he's. Are you going to rush Andrew Luck back if you put yourself in a really bad position early in the season?
I'd be worried if I were Chuck Pagano about my job, because you're on your second chance in Indianapolis, and it's very questionable if he stays there all year if they really dive bomb.
If he keeps them afloat, it'll be his best coaching job. Now, he's done some fire and brimstone speeches already where he's like, they had a big headline, no more Mr. Nice Guy, and they had Chuck, kind of yelled at his team. And they did respond with a nice preseason game. I don't know if that means anything. This schedule they have could not be easier if you even look past the first month. So who knows?
Tolzien got suckered into another terrible interception. Ryan Shazier just completely had him walk into an easy pick. You could just see that happening a lot if he's going to play.
I mean, the Colts probably see the Browns and think, oh, that's a winnable game. But now the Colts are the team that the Rams would be looking at, that everyone's looking at and say, hey, we got the Colts. That's a win.
Mark Sessler, you're up.
All right, let's go to Jacksonville. Two basic questions. We've talked about the Jacksonville Jaguars so much, and to me feels like nothing's changed at all. But one question here. Do the Jaguars have any idea what they want to be? Part two, and after another hopeful offseason, is this already a lost year in Jacksonville?
No.
Not yet.
It has the earmarks of it, and I don't like to say that because that fan base deserves better.
Unpredictable.
Identity was your first question?
Yes.
I think they might, which is give the ball to Leonard Fournette 20-plus times, take the ball out of the quarterback's hands, which it's not just hinting. It's not just, oh, we're picking this up from watching preseason games. The head coach said, we do not want to throw the ball ever. Now, does that work?
Does that work in 2017?
No, but that's what they're going to try to do.
Tell everybody.
And the deal, yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Just let everybody know. Maybe he's all setting everybody up and he's going to throw it 50 times a game. I don't know. But the defense, Greg, tell me I'm right or I'm wrong. The defense was actually pretty good last year. And if that defense takes the next step and Fournette's the real deal, maybe they can win some of these close games again in a bad division.
I mean, they were featured in 2017's Making the Leap. This defense, I believe, it's a top 10 group, partly because of Calais Campbell. Man, he had a monster game in their last preseason game, dominated the couple quarters that he played. You add him to a lot of talent around him.
I mean, Making the Leap, an entity with a flawless track record. So if you're a Jaguars fan, just sit back and enjoy.
We went with a new strategy this year, just went for 4 groups. So it'll be really easy to keep track of whether we got him right or not.
At what point does Brandon Allen not become a part of the conversation? I wonder, seeing Chad Henne and Blake Bortles and what they do, it's perhaps time.
This is the Vegas
to consider Allen.
The Vegas prediction ever, but something's going to happen here this weekend. There's going to be some big trades. I don't know if it'll be the Jaguars necessarily, but it wouldn't surprise me. Between the Jaguars, the Jets, the Ravens, and the Colts, I feel like there's cards left to be played. Not just Kaepernick, but just things we don't even see coming.
Well, on the show, we talked about potentially Bortles heading out and Kaepernick heading in Jacksonville. There's still time for that to be correct.
Very interesting.
Yeah, we haven't even talked since they announced him as the starter, which seems Blake Bortles is their weak starter. I don't understand how they reached that decision.
I don't know. In general, the preseason used to make a lot of sense the way it was structured, and now from how much teams are playing their guys to now you're starting your guy in week three and then not making him your week one starter, things are changing, and I don't like when things change.
Like, Henne played fine in that game, not great. Bortles certainly didn't play great. He had a terrible first drive and a bad interception on it.
It's a baffling decision.
If you throw a touchdown against the fourth string defense at the end of the game, that does not mean that you should now be the starting quarterback. What kind of coaching is this?
I think they mentioned his mobility was the reason.
They did.
Which was a nod to their lousy offensive line.
All right, Claybon, finish out the division.
All right, so we've discussed Blake Bortles, Tom Savage, and Scott Tolzien. Marcus Mariota kind of seems to be the outlier in that group of guys. And you look over on the other side at the defense, the front seven is largely intact, but they go out and they get Logan Ryan. And if Logan Ryan can get the calls that he used to get in New England, he can be
a
guy that makes plays. If he can be as grabby as he was allowed to be there.
Sub-tweeting Greg.
Jonathan Cyprian, they harvest him from Jacksonville, comes over, gets 4 years, $25 million. And so eventually they're still going to have some problems. Mariota is at some point going to throw an interception in the red zone. That streak's going to die. We're all going to be sad when it happens. But Jack Coughlin had that the best rookie year for an offensive lineman. Eric Decker is going to come in and be a difference maker for Mariota that he hasn't seen before. Like, we haven't had Marcus with that guy other than a Delanie Walker, but now we have somebody that can play on the outside, move into the slot. I really see so many paths in the division, but the most paths I see wind up with the Titans winning it.
The one thing I like about Tennessee under John Robinson is that I just asked about the Jaguars. There is no question what the Titans want their identity to be, and they've done a good job in quick order of making that a reality versus something they just talk about. And it's weird. It's a weird feeling in Nashville, but this has to be viewed as if they can operate and improve and live up to their potential, this is their division. That's something that also veteran teams that do that year after year know how to attack those expectations. It's just a question if Tennessee can get it done with so many young players on the team.
The two things that I want to see. One, can Marcus Mariota stay healthy, which we haven't seen in the first 2 years? And number two, if you remember this time last year, the Titans were the team that everyone was pumping up in this division, and then they came out and they kind of laid an egg, and it took them a while to get going, and then eventually they did, and they finished 9-7. But even then, with that 9-7 finish, the game that Mariota got hurt, they were kind of tanking a game, not on purpose, against the Jaguars, where they got beat bad to basically ruin their season. So I want to see this team kind of put it all together, because it didn't happen last year despite the positive strides.
The secondary, I believe, has been a huge problem for a long time, and so they addressed it aggressively. But those don't always work. Like Logan Ryan, he had a rough first preseason game. Not going to get crazy about that. He's not a number one cornerback to me. Adoree Jackson is an undersized guy who Mike Glennon shredded on Sunday and really picked on and is starting for that team. LaShawn Sims is another guy they might start. So to me, they have questions. They could really use Corey Davis to get healthy. He missed the entire first month, but Tywan Taylor. He's the rookie on this team, the third-round draft pick, who I think is going to be a bigger factor than Corey Davis early in the season.
We all have the Titans winning this division?
Wow, I don't like being of the same mind this much.
I
would love to pick somebody
I do,
else.
Because I'd like one team that we hype up in the offseason in the AFC South to not be a complete disappointment.
Right, I'm picking the Titans. I'm not getting off of it.
I'm close to the Texans, going with the Texans.
It's a safe, feels like the safe, secure, you know, not in a negative way, Dan.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go with the Texans. All right, finally, the AFC West. Congratulations, Texans. All right, finally, AFC West. Greg, get us going with the defending. Well, they didn't win the title last year in the division. The Raiders, go.
Should be great on offense. Not worried about that. Have a good-looking, great quarterback. Hit me. Derek Carr, who should be ready. So I'm not worried. The offense is going to be good. The defense, I still don't know why I should think they're why they should be any better. These are some of the players that are playing the linebacker for them. Jelani Jenkins, Tyrell Adams, Corey James. Like, they are still figuring out who their starting linebacker group is. David Amerson got hurt in their last preseason game. They haven't seen their first-round pick, Gerrion Conley, on the field really at all. They're optimistic he get back. Sean Smith, they were saying, might not even make the team. Like, that is a weird-looking back seven, and I worry a little bit about this team that they had so much success and they're feeling themselves, and can they do it again? Because it's not that – it happens that you win 11 or 12 games. Not many organizations can do it year after year. Like, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think they're built to go 12-4 again record-wise. I think they weren't a 12-4 team last year, to be honest. I think they were much closer to a 10-6 team, and that's probably where they'll be. I am not in love with the assumption that your Marshawn Lynch is going to come in and be a workhorse back for you. They do have depth in the backfield, but they're going to probably have to score 25 points a game to get out of this division. Talk about some of these teams with an easy schedule. Their schedule is brutal if you look at, they have to play in their own AFC West.
Yeah, the number of close games that the Raiders won that even came down to fourth down conversions, is that kind of success something that you can duplicate in this league year after year after year? And
no, the numbers show that those are the teams that typically have a, you know, quick route in the other direction.
I think they would, what they need is for their offense to go from one of the best, you know, 5, 6, 7 offenses to the point where they're in the mix as the best offense in the league, which is certainly possible. Like, you can imagine with that line and Carr and Crabtree and the deep backfield, like, you can imagine that they have the best offense in the league. To me, that's their recipe. I like these beeps back. We didn't forget you, Raiders.
We didn't forget about you guys. We feel very good about you guys. Any other points, guys?
Well, I think it's interesting that the announced move to Las Vegas has had seemingly zero impact on this team at all.
Yeah.
It would tear other cities and their fan base completely apart. It's had literally no effect.
The Marshawn factor. I think Marshawn came in and fixed all that.
That was kind of a savvy move because it kind of did throw it off the scent.
But if they go, if they start out 2-3 and the fans are a little upset, that might be effective.
The Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos. Boys, are they a little bit overlooked in this division right now? Okay, let's look at it this way. If Trevor Siemian is a league average starter, isn't this defense good enough to make them a threat in this division? And if Trevor Siemian, as Greg seems to contend, is an above average starter potentially,
I'm just saying, let's not rule it out. Why do we have to rule it out?
All right, calm down.
Year.
I'm making your point for you that he's good. Why can't they be a favorite to win this division? I just feel like they have become an afterthought 2 years after winning a Super Bowl. And we saw it again. We don't put a lot into the preseason. They shut down the Packers with their starters on the field. Von Miller put a spin move on Jason Spriggs. Should be illegal. It's how good it is. You still got the no-fly zone there. I just think that this team, which can easily be 8-8, and the quarterback position would be, to me, the main reason why, and I still have doubts about them. But I'm also willing to say, there's no reason to think that they could be an 11-5, 12-4 team if some things go the right way on the offensive side of the ball. Thoughts?
Kind of like the Bengals, I'm giving them credit to bounce back because I don't just think it's luck that they made the playoffs 5 straight years. I know they didn't win a game, but it's not just luck that the Broncos did that hardest thing in the NFL to do, which is win 12 games a year for 4 or 5 straight years.
Right.
They have a lot of those same players there, and there's things to like. C.J. Anderson, it's like he kind of has the 1 year on, 1 year off, or like he's very different dependent. He looks like a good C.J. Anderson this year. Jamal Charles showed a little something on Saturday night, and they announced that he's going to make the team. I like that. And then D'Angelo Henderson's look good. So that's a nice little backfield they got.
Their undoing last year was, you know, being dealt with one of the worst offensive lines in the AFC, if not the entire NFL. and it cost quarterback injuries. They couldn't run the ball at will. They couldn't stop the run with their own defense. So you've got to turn that around. I think the offensive line is key for them to have a winning record.
Paxton Lynch suffered a shoulder injury in the week 3 preseason game. He is now out of the mix for multiple weeks, it looks like. So Trevor Siemian, you know, you never want to see a guy go down, but there will be nobody looking over his shoulder. This is his team and his chance to run with this job, which is a pretty good situation for a former seventh-round pick to be in, especially with a team that has some weapons in place and a defense as good as this. I just think the Denver Broncos should not be overlooked, and they seem to be. Like, are they the third or fourth team that gets brought up when, in terms of, like, what are buzzy teams to talk about?
I think it's just that they're not the new, flashy new thing.
No, not at all.
And a lot of people sleep on Trev.
Exactly.
Been Team Trev for a while.
You've been Team Trev. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's good.
You and Greg have common ground.
If Jared Goff has the season that Trevor Siemian had last year, people are going to be like, wow, Goff, he's really finally living up to his number one.
Sessler.
Sean McVay, quarterback whisper. Okay, let's go to Kansas City, where my issue with the Chiefs is always the same. It's just that I feel like
I know where this is going.
You're
going
to go 11-5. You're going to lose in the playoffs. It's a very nagging, annoying thing to observe over the course of 17 weeks. If you're Andy Reid and you're still hanging around in the West, or if you're not, we always talked about Patrick Mahomes, as someone that simply will not see the field. No, the sky will fall and, you know, countries will take over America before Patrick Mahomes ever plays as a rookie. I ain't buying it. I think that honestly, although he's not perfect, he has a lot to work on, that we could see him this season. Do you believe that's possible?
It's possible.
What would it take?
You mean
to be two games under 500 halfway through the season or later?
Like a completely healthy Alex Smith and Andy Reid says, and they're contending. Andy Reid says, you know what? No, we're going with
that. Something occurs where the ceiling, this typical ceiling with Alex Smith, becomes obvious once again, and you've got a quarterback behind him that offers so many different traits. Yeah,
you say the ceiling, and I get that he's not flashy, but it's not like for instance, the last four seasons with Alex Smith at quarterback, 11-5, 9-7, 11-5, and 12-4. So this is a team that they win with a head coach and a quarterback, and perhaps they run out of juice in January because they get outclassed.
Well, then why do you trade up for a quarterback if everything's so safe and secure in Kansas City?
Because I don't necessarily believe you need to immediately throw the guy in the fire. This is the best situation for a young quarterback to come into. Smith is good but not great. They get to the playoffs but don't win games. So they have the ability to kind of bring the kid in slowly and develop. And Smith is a perfect bridge guy.
How often does that happen in the NFL?
Right.
I just wonder.
I think if they're 4-6, that's your answer. Then, yeah, then maybe you try it. But I think they want to get Mahomes more seasoning. As exciting as he's been, I think that third preseason game in Seattle, if you watch them, he was very frenetic
in
that game. And he didn't seem like he was quite ready, which is normal.
Right.
But the problem is I don't think the Chiefs are going to lose enough for that to be.
That's what I was saying. Like they've been winners with Smith behind center. They've not been winning playoff games, but they would have to go into a funk that hasn't really happened since he's been there.
If they get the real Justin Houston, which they haven't had for a full season now for a couple of years, if they get the Defensive Player of the Year candidate Justin Houston, like that changes who they are to me.
I do if I'm them, I put Sherman out there, Anthony Sherman, have him get popped by like major teams' best defensive players week after week, just deplete the rest of the NFL of resources.
You know,
but people just love to pop Sherman. Like,
guess so.
He's just a magnet.
5-game suspension.
I don't want to pound the table too hard for Alex Smith, but if he's on the Broncos, they would have been my division pick. I think Alex Smith is a pretty good quarterback.
I would take Siemian over him.
People think he's picked it up with the heat on his back.
Close it out, Patrick Claibon.
All right, the 2016 Chargers managed to go 1-8 in single score games. And shouting out Justice Mosaketa for this stat. The first team ever to finish back-to-back seasons with a sub-500 record in single-score games. And so, like, you add that up, and you look at the injuries, and it's like, well, this team's just really unlucky. Like, does luck exist? And so they have problems on the offensive line. They would feel like they had addition by subtraction. They lose DJ Fluker and Orlando Franklin, who weren't really playing that well on the interior offensive line. They go get Forrest Lamp, and then promptly Forrest Lamp tears his ACL in camp, And so he's out as well. But there's still so much to feel good about, and all the things that we liked. Year two of healthy Joey Bosa, a full year of Joey Bosa with no contract nonsense. He's able to get in. We saw him and Melvin Ingram team up for a sack, fumble, touchdown return against the Rams. I think this offense is going to score a lot of points, and I think the defense is going to make plays. They're going to rush the passer. The Chargers are going to be back.
This is
the luck has to come back.
This is why there's a lot of buzz about the Chargers being a potential. Who will be the team of ATL? The team
of ATL. We're getting the long version. Yeah.
What's the respect of this?
Sorry, Chargers fan, your 3 minutes are up.
Season premiere.
This is a very special honor. Anyway, they're in the mix. Other thoughts about the Chargers?
don't underrate the Philip Rivers Ken Wisenhunt connection at this point. The two times that they've been together, and now they've got some continuity. Rivers has never had this much young talent around him. It's the most talent he's had, period, since about 2007. If the line is just average, you got difference makers at every level of the defense in terms of the pass rush, in terms of Casey Hayward and Verrett in the secondary. I love just like the top tier, top 10 players on this team. This is Philip Rivers' time. This is the time to win the division.
I'm with you. Picked him to go to the Super Bowl.
Between
That's right. You're all in.
I'm all in.
Between Benjamin and Tyrell Williams, mm-hmm. It's tough to find two guys on one team that can just flat out fly.
Woo!
Like that. Fun to watch.
And Keenan Allen and
it's
Hunter
all on
Henry
paper.
Over the middle.
The battle for LA
paper,
is over.
Everything looks good, and they certainly look like a better team than the Rams.
The battle for LA is over.
The battle for LA never existed, it seems. They're going to – I think if they start winning, they're going to sell out their little soccer stadium, and that will be
set
buzz.
A tad dismissively.
Well, they drew 21,000 for the first game, which was a bit troubling, let's be honest. But if they start winning, that will cure that, I would think. They just got to put it together, which they haven't been able to do for years now. And I don't want to be a doubter, but I got to see it, I guess.
I love this division. Best division in football. I would be pleased to just be assigned to be the AFC West beat writer and, like, cover all these four teams.
Yeah, nerd out, Greg. I love it. Pick a winner of the division, though.
It's the Chargers.
You got the Chargers. Mark, they're winning the division to go to the Super
Bowl.
Actually,
I have
card?
Them as a wild card team.
Wow.
Going to the Super Bowl.
Claybon?
Broncos.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dan convinced
Sneaky. You. How about that? I will go with the Raiders. So how about that? Well, four.
Wait, you never actually picked a team.
Well, I picked my divisional team as the Chiefs, then they'll lose in the playoffs.
Oh.
So there we go. We had all four divisions represented. Okay, that's it for around the AFC in 48 minutes. Yes, and the Chargers are in the mix as team of ATL. We'll have to marinate any other teams we talked about. Something to think about. And then Wednesday we will do the NFC teams, and that'll be exciting. Patrick Claiborne, you've done an excellent job pinch hitting.
Thanks, man.
For what is a very important segment in society-wise.
I feel like they're going to call you down because they did just announce that the preseason game will be played in Dallas.
Oh.
There you go. And let me throw something out here in terms of what's going on down in Houston. Donations to the Red Cross for those affected by Harvey can be made online or text Harvey to 909-99. Donations to the Salvation Army can be made online as well if you want to help out what's going on down there.
Shout out to all our Houston listeners.
Absolutely.
Hopefully they're safe.
Stay safe, stay dry, and good luck with everything. We'll be back Wednesday, as we said. So let's move forward into the week. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the Sizzler. Get well soon, buddy.
Thanks.
Claiborne, the boss, and Erica Tamposi behind the glass. Some call her a loose cannon. Till Wednesday.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.